It's The Takeaway, and I'm Lizzie O'Leary, host of the podcast What Next TBD at Slate, in for Tanzina Vega all this month. Coming to you from my closet-turned-radio studio here in Brooklyn, it's very nice to have you with us on this Wednesday. Listen, we know there's a lot of news in D.C. this week, with President Trump removing two inspectors general involved in oversight and the ongoing leadership collapse of the Navy. Congress is also working on the next phase of relief bills, and it's a blur of things happening at the top. And so a lot of people dealing with the COVID-19 era can get lost in the shuffle. And we don't want that to happen here. As the death toll continues to rise and social distancing becomes the norm, one group is facing a unique challenge. People in recovery from addiction have seen their support systems, including meetings like Alcoholics Anonymous, disappear or change. We spoke to a number of people in various stages of recovery about this moment and what happens when isolation is forced on a population that relies on connection for hope and even survival.
It feels absolutely foreign and alien to me. The entire concept of recovery, specifically recovery from addiction and substance use disorders, is built on this sense of community, this sense of belonging, this sense of doing anything other than isolating.
That's Ryan Hampton.
I'm the author of American Fix, Inside the Opioid Addiction Crisis and How to End It. And I'm also a person in long-term recovery from opioid use disorder.
Ryan lives in Las Vegas and has been sober for just over 5 years. Like a lot of others, his in-person meetings and services have moved online to platforms like Zoom.
Look, I am fortunate enough to be able to participate in these digital meetings because I have a smartphone. I have access to internet. A lot of people don't even have access to just regular phones, let alone smartphones. So they don't even have the tools to be able to plug into this digital infrastructure that's kind of the gap filler right now, given COVID. Even though we've got all these digital tools at our fingertips, and I've probably attended more recovery meetings in the last, 2 weeks, there's still this very real element that's missing, which is just that human-to-human interaction in person.
Ryan says he's most worried about those in early recovery or who are trying to take their first steps toward getting help.
There's so many people out there who are either just getting introduced to the concept of recovery or they're still struggling and looking for help right now. And there's just very limited options and literally no options, zero options for having like actual human contact and human community. That's where a lot of my concern goes, because I can tell you, if COVID would have happened in, November of 2014, when I was looking for treatment for the last time, and when I was on the streets homeless on the corner of Hollywood and Highland, like ready for help, I may be dead right now. That is the honest to God truth.
And while individual groups scramble to help as many people as possible during this time, Ryan also has a bigger picture on his mind, and he can't shake it.
When people can't find jobs, and when people don't have that meaningful human connection, and when recovery centers aren't able to bring in people who need help, or there's more barriers to treatment or recovery support groups, or harm reduction is a whole other piece. We don't have the same type of harm reduction that we had prior to COVID-19 because the teams aren't going out on the ground and distributing clean syringes and fentanyl test strips. We know that those all create kind of this perfect storm for more overdoses. My fear is that we are going to come out of the COVID crisis maybe and flattening that curve, but what we're going to see is this entire new curve spike of overdose deaths. I mean, it's almost certain that that's going to happen.
I just think back when I got sober, how impossible it felt, without what's going on now. So I think it would be terrifying.
That's Lauren Hamilton. We spoke to her last year on The Takeaway for our series, Life After Overdose.
I'm an attorney in Cleveland, Ohio. This is my fiance, Dan Freck.
I work in finance for a nonprofit.
Lauren's still sober since the last time we spoke. She's at 21 months now. They live together in Cleveland, Ohio, and attend their virtual AA meetings together, too.
It's gone off a lot more smoothly than I expected it to. To be able to log on to the computer and see familiar faces every day, I think, is keeping some people, a lot of people, a lot of us sane.
But it's still a struggle with hard days.
Now is like the kind of time you think you're the addict in your brain thinks like, I could totally get away with relapsing right now. You know, if we didn't show up to work, you know, it wouldn't be as noticeable.
Right. You call in, you tell them you're feeling sick.
Right.
And be like, oh, don't do anything. You know, it's like.
Yeah. And especially if you're someone who's alone in your house, like it can be reminiscent of those days when you were drinking or using, because so many of us were doing, at the end, we're doing that alone. Mm-hmm. So that, I think that can be triggering for people. I've had a lot of dreams about using since this whole virus thing started. So I don't know what that is, but probably just my subconscious kicking in, you know, over time to keep me sober.
Like Ryan, Lauren and Dan are also really worried about newcomers to recovery. Those people who are especially vulnerable, even without a global pandemic for a backdrop.
We picked someone up over the weekend who had been locked in their house drinking themselves to death. We dropped her off at the hospital, but like we couldn't come in with her.
I was really struck by that moment when we pulled up to the emergency room and dropped her off because, you know, she was pretty intoxicated, but got a wheelchair for her. And there are all these guys standing outside with masks on their faces telling me I can't go in. She's one of my sponsees. So she was like crying and really scared and like begging me to come in with her, you know, and I couldn't. They weren't letting anyone in but patients. And that's the isolation. That's like what I think of,
right.
You know, what it's like to be a newcomer right now or to still be using is like, you're going to be isolated. Even if you are, she was asking for help and we were helping her. But in the end, she had to go into that emergency room alone.
From Las Vegas to Cleveland and now to Washington, D.C. That's where we virtually meet Danielle Torino.
I'm the president and CEO of Young People in Recovery.
Danielle is also a person in long-term recovery. In the middle of this pandemic, she says her organization is trying to help young people in recovery connect with resources, including help finding housing and employment, even though they can no longer engage in person.
At this point, the engagement with people, especially people in early recovery, so in treatment or just out of treatment or recently involved in the criminal justice system, those first few weeks, months, years in recovery are fundamental for the way that we engage with people and the way that we provide social connectivity. And so we have our many anxieties about what it means to now be engaging with people on the phone or via video instead of in person.
Another challenge right now for Danielle and other people who do this kind of work is navigating what the federal legislation around COVID-19 means for people seeking treatment or those who are in recovery.
We are concerned in a couple of different states. I've heard, you know, some chatter among my colleagues in those places that they're worried that the types of behavioral health professionals that our people need the most will be left out of those law relaxations.
But amidst all this uncertainty, there's also been some joy.
I had the ability to call into an all-recovery meeting in Rockport, Texas, and be there and be a part of it and connect with people on the ground. And it was all women in this meeting, and it was very intimate and beautiful. And, you know, I'm also a person in long-term recovery, and so I understand deeply on what it means to be in early recovery and scared and nervous and feeling isolation. So the ability to connect with our own people has been wonderful.
And there's been a little bit of that beauty and joy for our final voice, too.
I'm David, and I am coming up on 26 years of clean and sober.
David's in his 60s, and he's lived most of his adult life here in New York City. He regularly attends two different AA meetings, both of which are now online.
It is nice in an odd way because I have seen people geographically who are now far away. They used to go to this meeting. Now they live in California. My friend John in San Francisco suddenly was at the meeting because he could be. And he came just to see everybody else. There was a gentleman who was looking for a gay meeting and he doesn't have one where he lives. And he found our Zoom number and came in and said, "This is so nice to have a primarily gay meeting. I feel even more comfortable. I don't have one near me in the rural place I live."
And while a number of people we spoke to have talked about what's missing from these meetings versus their in-person counterparts, David was surprised to discover this.
It's funny because in a strange way, it's more intimate because with a Zoom meeting, you're seeing each other face to face the way you and I are right now. Now, if I was in an AA meeting, I'd be in rows of chairs and possibly the person talking would be behind me. I might glance over my shoulder to see who they are. I probably know them. I know most everybody at my meeting. But you're not looking at them, and you're not looking at them as close as we are. Suddenly, there's an intimacy that I did not expect on Zoom. And now people are doing what we do live, which is they're coming into the meeting 10, 15 minutes earlier to chat with each other, kind of hanging around, how you doing, what's going on. And that's what I thought I would miss too, of just the friendships and relationships. But we're making a way to make that happen.
But David says there has been some ugliness in this process of adapting to AA online.
The trouble we've run into is that people have Zoom bombed the meetings, which I thought was specific to AA, but sadly I'm learning it happens in lots of Zoom gatherings. Somehow they get into the chat feature, and in this case, because it's a primarily gay meeting, they spew horrible homophobic slurs. I can't repeat what they say because it's really vulgar, and it repeats like someone's holding a key down, like they hit repeat, the same phrase will fill the screen. And it was sort of freakish when it first happened.
David says his group is figuring out how to keep the vitriol out of the meetings with more protection, while trying to keep as much of a virtual open door to AA newcomers as possible. Across the country, the people we spoke to all had similar messages about how you can help those who might be struggling with addiction or just struggling in general.
Call and check in on your friends, especially if you haven't heard from them.
Please check in with your loved ones. Check in with your family members.
If you have people in your life who relapse or who you think are drinking too much, try to be compassionate and supportive rather than judgmental.
I don't think it matters if you're close to them or not. And we're in the whole world is in this very strange and scary times. Even a stranger reaching out to you, you know, could make the difference.
Please find a way to instill a little bit of hope in those that are around you, and empathy and understanding. You know, one of the best ways to do that is just by reaching out, being open, having conversations with them, telling somebody that you love them, that you believe in them, that we are going to get through this together. Because I've had multiple conversations just in the last 2 days of people who feel that they just don't know if they can get by one more day. Tell them that they can.
Many thanks to all the people we spoke to for this story. And if you're in recovery or seeking help and would like to connect virtually with others in this moment, some folks we spoke to recommended heading to Google's Recover Together site, where you can find a whole host of resources, including a list of online AA groups. That's at recovertogether.withgoogle.com. You can also call the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration's National Helpline 24 hours a day. That's at 1-800-662-HELP.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.